Hey, Koofy Bush, your girl, Kendrick and McClary Easley, back with another live interview here at NCIA San Francisco. The people are blunt, y'all know what it is. And I am here with Kevin Green from the Cleveland School of Cannabis. How are you?
I'm good.
So before we jump in, because I have tons of questions for you, but before we jump in, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so, you know, my background has really been in business development, marketing, PR, a lot of community development work, and truthfully, the biggest thing, the biggest impact that I've had in my career is in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, you know, when the cannabis industry became an opportunity, it was something that I never thought I would jump into, because I never thought about growing plants or being really working in the industry. But education was just such a huge gap, and I felt from my background, the work that I've done with public partnership for governments, nonprofits, and the diversity work and equity work that I've done for the last decade, I felt that obviously we know this industry is in high need of that. And then at the same time, I really feel that it's time for us to find out new ways and how we reach a level of equity, which we've never done in any part of the world, definitely not in the United States. So it's been quite interesting, that transition, you know, into the space. But, you know, truthfully, I think it's one of those things like, you know, you do a lot of things, you're not sure where it's going to get you, and then the perfect opportunities comes that you were prepared for these opportunities.
Yeah,
it's been great to take advantage.
The universe pulled you in,
yep.
Right? Like
yep.
Right now, you are where you need to be.
Exactly.
So the interesting thing, I was doing my homework on you, and you are like a serial entrepreneur. Like I feel like you almost came out the womb. Like I'm not working for nobody. I gotta figure this out. Like what am I doing? How am I doing it? I am my own boss, right? So like, where did that bug come from, though? Like, is that your family?
So truthfully, yes, so I'm a Jamaican immigrant.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
I know, you got eight
you got
jobs.
You got two jobs.
So a Jamaican immigrant came here when I was seven.
Okay.
And my mom and my uncle was the first generation of my family to never own their own business, right? You know, my parents grew up, you know, in the country and things of that sort. So my grandfather was like a tin man, so he made pots and things of that sort. My grandmother ran a restaurant as well. So when I was young, mom was actually like cleaning homes when we first came to America, right? And she told me I was about like nine. She's like, you know what you should do is why don't you come with me and then you start cleaning their cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first
business. Come on, mom.
Yeah, so that was my first business. I hated it.
Yeah.
I never did a good job.
But it was a lesson, right?
But it was a lesson in the sense of how you can monetize your skills and really stand on your own. And she always really tried to push that in me, you know, because she was upset that she wasn't able to go ahead and start something entrepreneurial, but she always pushed that in me from that day. You know, once you get that first, you know, dollars handed to your hand.
And it's your own money, right?
And it's your own money.
It's your own
money. I have to pay her cut, you know, her finance fee.
Like, that's it. That's it. She's a manager.
She's a manager.
Look, I get the deal.
Yeah, exactly. So it was something that just instilled for me that time. And then obviously just seeing how hard she worked, how hard the adults in my family worked. So, you know, that thing of seeing how you can create something for yourself, but also the amount of work you have to put in and what it really takes to be successful. You know, that blend at a very, very small age, seeing that consistently all the time and no complaints was really what I always say that's what made the most impression on me, is that you never complain about anything. So I really try to live up to that every single day. I'm just trying to have a little piece of her.
She sounds like an amazing woman.
She is.
Yeah. So shout out to the moms, right? Parents in general, but like, you know, moms are definitely, especially with their boys, like moms have this special bond, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in the cannabis world and, you know, you had this transition. What has been most surprising to you up until this point of just kind of like being in this space?
You know, truthfully, the most surprising thing is how complex it is.
Yeah.
So I was the person, when I was used to cannabis being young and the industry started to get more developed and you have all these cultivars coming out.
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to sell
you. People talking about loud and this and that's just Reggie and.
I would be like, shut up, stop lying to me.
You're right.
I don't care. Is it good?
That's
you know
all
I
want. Are there seeds?
Exactly.
Are there seeds in the bag?
Exactly.
I don't want this.
Exactly.
I don't want the seed in the bag. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, once I got into it and then I started to see the real complex level that this industry works at, especially extraction. Yeah, I remember the first time tasting some edible. And I ate it, and I hated it because obviously it was overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't leave my friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend was just staring at me the entire time. I was like, all through the night, I ain't going anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, you know, It was literally a gap of 12 years that I took my next edible, and it wasn't until I got into this and understood dosages and what was going on with that and what it actually really means. And I was just ignorant, right? And I stayed ignorant for so long. So seeing the complexity, but also seeing all the nuances how to get in.
Yeah.
I never looked at the industry because I thought my skill sets didn't make sense in the industry. Mm-hmm. Finding out that literally you could almost transition almost any skill sets into the cannabis industry itself because of the entire industry, right?
Yeah.
It's not just about the plant touch.
That's
been one of the most things.
That's huge.
It's been revolutionary in the sense of how I look at things, especially through the industry, but truthfully everything. Now I can't look at anything the same, and cannabis, you know, allowed me to do so.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you were talking earlier about equity and all the work that you've done in terms of diversity and equity and just how we're so far gone here in the States, right? Like, we have so much work to do in terms of truly even understanding what equity is, because a lot of times people like to interchange that with equality. They're two different things, two different meanings, right? But even how on a global scale, what happened here in the U.S., how we have influenced, impacted, bullied other countries of adopting like our principles and things of that nature. So specifically with that lens, the work that you're doing in cannabis, you know, what I guess I would say is most alarming to you?
You know, the thing that's most alarming to me is that when you're taking a system that's inequitable, individuals, organizations, right, that have never really, that has never accomplished this goal, have never done a good job.
Yeah.
And we're basically putting a band-aid and calling it social equity, right? We're saying, hey, this system should be the ones that are in charge of it. Well, the system has never actually created an equitable process.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how are they going to actually create something when they've actually never been done in other areas, right? You know, the social equity, that the lens that we're talking about in cannabis, affects all the other systems, right? We still have a poor criminal justice system, right? We still have a poor banking system, right? If we're thinking about equity, the one thing is people should have access to banks.
Yeah.
So if you want to create an even playing field, people should be able to get access to bank money and not have to sell the majority of their companies to be able to raise capital in that situation, right? So if we're really thinking about equity, we have to really start to understand that we cannot just put the band-aid on it, right? And we have to understand the historical context of why people are where they are, the systems at play, and not just try to get them to be viable today.
Yeah.
We have to get them viable for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because if we don't get them viable for today, the individuals that didn't need the help, which is why we have any type of equity initiative, is always going to be steps ahead of that process, right? So we really have to, as I said, it's not a quality. It's about understanding the context. It's about creating systems for support and enhancement and really trying to break down a lot of the barriers that are so systematically ingrained into our cultural norms that it makes it seem like when we're actually trying to create equity, we're creating oppression for groups that haven't been marginalized,
That's
how it feels.
They feel like they're losing something.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a beautiful way to put it, right? So I was digging into, you know, how this idea formed, how it started in terms of the Cleveland School, right? And, you know, I love travel, right? Prior to the pandemic, I was like, I need 2 stamp trips a year. Like, I have to go places. But I've not visited the Dominican Republic yet, right? Like, I haven't ventured to that island. So you're on this trip, you meet these people, okay? This whole thing was wild to me because I was just like what? Okay, so you're on this trip, you meet these people, and you know, what about this group and these individuals made you comfortable to the point where you were like, you know what? I need to rock with them. Like, I'm willing to go in and create this partnership. And if you want to dig a little bit more, because I just kind of glossed over it, but yeah.
So, you know, when you think about opportunity, right?
Yeah.
I always say, because I've lived it now, opportunities are everywhere. They're plentiful.
Yeah.
Are you prepared and ready to take advantage of them? And meeting the person, can you even see them, right?
Yeah.
You have the lens to even see the opportunity, and you have the skills, and are you ready to take advantage of it? And what really happened after the connection and the conversation we started to have with my business partner now is we got to build, we just hung out. So we got to see who each other's work.
Who you are. Yeah.
Who we were first, right?
Yeah.
It was just cool vibe. It was good, right? Because again, doing business with people, you know, it's a full relationship.
I mean, it gets very personal.
It gets very,
especially when you're talking about my money.
Exactly.
It's personal now.
Very,
right.
Very personal, right? You know, think about that situation. So, you know, we got that chance, and it was actually our last night, our last dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We brought it up, and I always, you know, as an entrepreneur, I always think about those moments. You know, we read all these entrepreneur stories. We've been a part of seeing, you know, the tech age has showed us a ton of entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
But what were they doing, right? They were in the right situation at the right time, and they were willing to take the leap.
Yeah, stars aligned.
Exactly. And I was looking at this, and I was like, this is crazy. But this might be my opportunity to take a leap into something that is going to change the world, right?
Yeah.
And after just the week that we spent together, and then that conversation we had, I left there saying, you know what? You know, this is your opportunity. Are you going to sit there and squander it, or are you going to go ahead and take a chance and take a leap? You don't fully know what's going on right now, but this is the next big thing. And you have an opportunity to be at the ground floor.
Yeah.
And you only get that a few times in your lifetime. You get it one time, right? So it was blessed to be in that position and blessed to actually see the opportunity.
Yeah.
And as they say, very generic, man. I jumped off, no wings, and then I'll build the wings as we're trying to hit the ground so we can start flying a little bit. And it's been a blessing. And I'm sitting here with you at NCIA, speaking at these events. Again, when I got into this whole thing, you know, didn't even know what a different multivar was outside of Hayes and Grove, and I grew up on the East Coast, but that was about it.
Right. And then it's a whole new world, right?
Whole new world.
For me as well, because I'm new in the cannabis space, right? And so I'm learning about dabs and learning about, you know, chillums and this and that. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, what are all of these things? What is going on? So it's definitely mind-blowing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the level of interest, that's me, I think. Hold on. Okay. Let me... I'm like, why is my phone going off? This is why I need the kids. My niece and them, they keep me together. They're like, auntie, this is what you have to do with your phone. This is what you have to do. I'm like, I thought this thing was on the side. Anywho, but yes, yeah, like, I mean, it blew my mind, the level of knowledge that people have in this space. This is going to piss me off. This is what happens when you lie. All right, cool beans. So.
You know we lie.
Look, okay? And I'm going to put this down here so it doesn't even do this vibrate, because I don't know how to turn my vibration on. But anywho, so yes, what's your question for you? Here now, you all have this amazing program, right? That I love that it goes not only from seed to sale, but you have an executive component to it, right? What is on the horizon for you? Like, where do you see this going?
So truthfully, the next step is national accreditation.
Okay.
So we are the first cannabis-only education company in the world to have a cannabis national accreditation.
Okay.
In quick terms, what that means is you have 2 years, the fact that you're going to do things right by national accreditation rules.
Okay.
Then you apply, and they do a full interview audit, and they make a decision if they're going to take you on to actually accredit you. So you have to go through an accrediting body, right?
Okay.
So our accreditor is Middle States Association.
Okay.
And understanding that we wanted to create excellence, it's continuing to drive that in the industry. Middle States basically is an accreditor for some of the top universities in the United States. So when you think about the Harvards, the Yales, some private colleges, that's who they're accredited. So we're in
the
same situation as them.
So we're
now a candidate. Now we have 8 months basically to continue to show that we're keeping high standards and all the processes and all the audits to get to national accreditation. About 8 months away from that process. Once we get to national accreditation, what we basically stamped and shown is the fact that a cannabis education company only focused on cannabis, not a school that's doing other things, that's throwing some curriculum in there, that's solely focused on developing the true work, the next workforce for one of the largest growing industries in the world, is here and it's viable. What that brings not only to our alumni, our past alumni, our current students, our future students, our partners, our MSO partners, small operators, et cetera, is to say that we are really changing the world together.
It's a weight to it. It's a weight to it.
It is definitely a weight to it.
Yeah.
And as I said, and when I think about being ready for opportunities, you know what I mean? When I came here to this country with zero. I mean, I lived through, and my parents and my mom has been through some egregious things that she won't even talk to me about. There's things that she wished I don't remember, but I do. And to be in this opportunity, I've had the weight on the world my back my entire life, and many people that have the same lived experience that look like me, been through the things that I've been through, had the weight on their world, and have learned how to live through crisis and been able to still make something out of it, right? So to be in this position right now, I always just say I was built for it. You know, me and my team, we were built for the situation. So we're up for the challenge. You know, we're going to do whatever it takes. You know, again, just to take on national accreditation, you talk to the big schools, they get scared because of the amount of stress that it causes. And for us, it's kind of a thing to say, hey, this is what needs to get done. And truthfully, what we're trying to do is just create more stability in our industry for everyone all. It's not just about what we're going to do with the Clinical School of Cannabis, you know, with our partner Al Harrington from Vital Brands and Harrington Institute. It's about really, truthfully, the next step. It's the next up at bat. That young individual, you know, right now that's trying to figure out what they want to do next, where they want to be, who they want to be, and all opportunities are open to them. And because they go to cannabis, they're not going to be looked at as that they're lazy, they're not smart, they're wasting their lives.
And I love the intentionality with that. You know, this is something when I was, like I said, doing the research, that it was clear that you and your partners, you agreed at the inception that this is a necessity, that you had to have these different accreditations, that you wanted to make sure that what you all were offering, that there was accountability to that, right? And that there was a standard by which you were pushing it out into the world. So I love that. I love that. And not just for you all, but again, with those who partake in your program, what it allows them to go out into the world, into the industry and say, right? It gives them, you know, that kind of gravitas to say, like, no, my program is the shit. Like, yep. I went to the Cleveland School. Like, you know that you're getting a certain kind of, you're getting a certain amount of knowledge, you know, and you're getting a certain amount of quality from that individual and what their skill set should be, right? Whatever track they chose. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's amazing. So, okay. We're going after national. Okay. Do you see international, especially with your background, especially with you being Jamaican, right? And we're seeing in the news that there are, and this is so funny to me because I'm like, Jamaica's like the birthplace of like cannabis, ganja, and so like when you read these articles about, you know, how people from the States are going over there and helping them to, I guess, kind of bring structure to you know, to their culture, right? And to the plant over there. It's really crazy to me. But anyway, I personally imagine someone more like you, you know, being in those kind of spaces. And so is this something that you can see yourself, that you and your partners can see yourselves, you know, kind of expanding beyond just the U.S.?
Yeah, definitely. So I've had some conversations with individuals. Okay. Obviously, for me personally, it'd be a full circle type.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? You know, at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
You know, I think what we have to understand is that I always fear savior mentality. Right?
Yeah.
You're going to go to someone's country, you're going to go to someone's community and say, I know what you need. Right?
Yeah.
That's not the way to do things, and that's not an equitable way, right? What you should do is you go and investigate, you empower, and you listen, you learn, you understand that culture, and then you provide guidance when it's warranted and when that's actually when it's asked for, when it's requested, right? You don't go in and say, we know how to do things,
right?
And especially in a country like Jamaica, where the ganja, the Rastafarian lifestyle is really a
that
driving
religion.
Force,
yeah.
A part of the pop culture. And obviously in America, African Americans, jazz, musician, things of that sort, is a big part of culture, right? Music is obviously a big part of cannabis,
absolutely.
Right? That culture is then ingrained. So I think there is a disconnect for individuals that think they can just slap a corporate model under some over something that is holistic, right? It's not just that it's a holistic way of healing, it is a holistic way of being, right? That is very, very different.
Yes.
So trying to slap a corporate structure on that is going to create a major disconnect because it's going to bump heads with what the actual culture of the islands are, you know, totally, right?
Yes.
And connecting to that. So, you know, I think at this point, if we're really thinking about how do we do that, is that how do we find individuals from those communities abroad or locally to
who you
be,
can support
to be support.
Yes.
It's how do we enhance those individuals, not push them to the side and say we know what's best.
Yes.
That is truthfully how you're going to get the best outcome in anything. Because if they go for the individuals that have the nuances and what I say the competitive advantage that you can't learn in school, you can't research, can't do it. It's just there, and that's only to live the experience.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get that. That's that thing, you know what I mean?
I don't even want to say swag, right?
It is a little bit of swag.
It's our intrinsic rhythm, right? And you can't learn that. Like, I can't give that to you. You know what I'm saying?
Can't even explain.
I can't.
We just know.
I can't. Yeah, it's something there. It's just like a vibration. Like, we're on a different vibration, right? And so, like, real recognizes real in that regard. Yeah, so first of all, I just, man, I love the fact, one, that you all are so intentional about this, because it's something that I really dislike, right? Is that savior mentality thing and not building the necessary like coalitions, and making sure that like the stakeholders, like people who are actually like already there engaging, the people who are already doing the work, the people who essentially would be those receiving the services, but like those are not the people who are at the table, part of the decision making. Not just that, but who actually have a seat in it, so that they are building wealth, or they are, you know, positioning themselves in an elevated way. So I love that. I know we got to get you out of here, but I have another question. So I'm a new mom. I'm a new mom.
Congrats.
Fairly new, 15 months. He is peeing in a potty.
Oh, already?
My gosh, yes.
He's a new.
Listen. He is a
listen.
He is an old man. He's an old soul. Okay, he literally just walked up to it like, "Yep, I'm going to this," and it has a little flush thing on it, and so it makes the sound and the lights, and so he feels like a big guy. So I'm here for it. We still got pull-ups and stuff. We, you know, we're working on it, but we're starting. Okay,
he's starting. He's ahead.
Listen. So I know you're a father, and I know that there is heavy stigma around cannabis still, even with Alabama. You know, knowing that we're at a majority, going into super majority in terms of usage and people who want it to be legalized. How do you deal with this? How do you address this? How do you talk about it with your children? And then, you know, also knowing that they're going to go on to the world, because you know, once you tell a baby something, they're going to be like, oh, but my dad said this is okay. This is not wrong. My dad said, well, we ain't dealing with the DARE program, you know, whatever. So how do you deal with that?
You know, truthfully, it's about courageous conversations and transparency on the facts. So my son is 5, going on 6. And,
what's his name?
Xavier. And I have taken the chance to say, I've sat him down and I have actually shown him. And I explained to him that it's dad's medicine. I've gone with a 5-year-old. Gone through this entire process to start to really build his basic understanding of what this is, so he's not indoctrinated by the propaganda that has been around that's affected me at the end of the day, right? Growing up, right? And it's funny, it sees, because he will literally say, hey, daddy, your medicine. And just that change, right, in language.
Just normalizing
and
it.
Normalizing and being purposeful about it. You could just see how he tells it. I had that comment. This is for adults. This is adult medicine. And I put it next to the Advil, right? The amoxicillin, right?
That's all the other cabinet. Things.
Medicine
cabinet
that you're not allowed to touch.
Yep.
This is a part of that process, right? So it's just, again, a 5-year-old. And just seeing the impact that that's made on him and his self-awareness of that process, what I'm hoping is that he's more aware and he doesn't take the same track with any type of controlled substance the way that I did. Everything was held away from me. They would just tell me not to do no information.
Which means you want to do it more. All I did was telling me not to do it.
All I did was binge on.
Yep.
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, right? It took me to be in a world where now I use less cannabis because I know more.
Right.
So my hopes is the fact that I'm able to actually help him navigate his teenage years a lot better, because he'll be prepared and way educated. So someone with him saying this and doing this, he's going to understand his limits. He's not just going to go and eat that edible and not know what's going on and be stuck on somebody's couch and their girlfriend looking at
him. I lost 2 days, my first edible. I lost 2 days, my first edible. I was stuck. 2 days. Okay? I'm not complaining about it. But it also took me a while before. It was over the holidays. So it was like, smoke. You ain't got nothing to do. Go ahead and chill here. But literally, it was like 2 days. But it did. You know, it was definitely a long time before I ventured back into that. It was like, I mean, I can't do that on a regular basis, and I can't chance not knowing.
Yep.
And so even from then to now, just the development, right, and the leaps and bounds that we're making in this industry, is still not knowing, like, the full scope of this plant and all of this potential. Kevin, I want to thank you. First of all, you got to agree that we are going to actually have like a full interview, like where we actually can like take some time, because I know we are like rapid fire right now. But I thank you so much for giving of yourself, of your time, and the intentionality that you operate in this industry with is a breath of fresh air. It's so appreciated. It's so needed. And like the People's Cannabis and the People are Blunt, we love you.
appreciate it. I love being on here. Definitely. Let's set it up.
Yes. Yes. The new year. Let's do it.
It's only a couple weeks away, so let's not wait too long.
Yes. All right, y'all. Stay blunted.